Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. And this hour, the Owls of Iowa. We'll also talk about some northern neighbors who seem to be paying us a visit this year. And with me now is wildlife biologist Jim Pease. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being here today.
You bet. It's another gorgeous December day. It's a little closer to normal temperatures today, but not like we've been experiencing in the last couple of weeks, but so it's kind of on the cool side.
Right. Almost like winter.
Almost. Right.
Now, if you follow any bird groups in Iowa, and, you know, there are a bunch on Facebook and listservs and all kinds of places you can look for this information.
Right.
There have been a lot of sightings of snowy owls, particularly in the northern part of the state. And this is something that people were predicting. Tell me why this was predicted. What are the circumstances that lead to snowy owls making it all the way down here to balmy Iowa?
Right. Yeah, to balmy. It is balmy this year, that's for sure. Well, it's a common thing that happens with a lot of northern critters. And it includes everything from snowshoe hares in the boreal forest to snowy owls in the Arctic. They go through regular cycles of sort of boom and bust in response to the available food supply. And we know from lots of interesting studies on nutrition in domestic animals that domestic animals, and this was done, criminy, in the 50s and 60s, the domestic animals respond very quickly to increased nutrition and increased food supply by increasing their litter sizes, increasing the birth weights of the young, having even in some cases more litters than they normally would. So it happens in the wild too. It turns out the snowshoe hares that I studied back in the early 70s in northern Alberta were going through regular cycles of about 9 to 11 years, somewhere around in there, in a given location, a part of the province across the boreal forest. And this is not just true across Canada and the boreal forest, but it's true around the world. In Eurasia, it's called the varying hare. They have gone through cycles for centuries. And so it's quite interesting that we see this in owls. The snowy owl is normally nests in the Arctic. They nest on the ground. They make a little hollow in the on a sort of a raised area in the tundra, and of course trees on the tundra are no more than 6 inches high, so they're used to being on the ground all the time, and they get a little advantage by being up on a mound someplace in order to look around, and so when they nest there. There's an advantage to being white. Well, it turns out that snowy owls and a few other owls, especially barn owls, B-A-R-N, go through. They can respond very, very quickly to increases in their food supply. So rather than waiting a year or two for their bodies to get in better shape like a lot of mammals do, these birds can respond to increased food supply very, very quickly. And it means that they can have, instead of in low parts of the cycle where they don't have much food around, they might have a zero to two or three eggs. All of a sudden, in 1 year, when there are lots of prey around, and in this case, it's lemmings and voles, little mouse, small rodents on the tundra, when their populations suddenly explode, so do the snowy owls. So in a response, they'll have 11 or 12 eggs in their clutches rather than 0 to 3. You know, so they can respond very, very quickly. Well, just as quickly, the population of voles and lemmings can decline very quickly. in part due to predation, part due to weather changes, that sort of thing. And they will then, all of a sudden, they're left here, they're coming into winter, and boy, there are not many lemmings around. So they go south, and they normally go south in the winter into the boreal forest region across Canada and the northern U.S. a little bit into upstate New York and Maine and northern Minnesota. That's not unusual to see them in the winter. But when they come farther south, and in the numbers that they're doing, it says, boy, there was a big eruption, a big increase in the number of lemmings this summer, and now this fall the lemmings population is down, and so the owls have really come farther south. Right now we have, you mentioned one of the going on the web and finding websites. If you look at the Iowa Ornithological Union, it's www.iowabirds.org. You'll see a map that Matt Wetrick is keeping track across the state of all of the snowy owl sightings. And we now have in Iowa, we've had including dead owls found on the road and some found over the last several months, we now have about 70 sightings. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily 70 owls, but the same owl could be, you know, moving in different locations in the same area. So, but we 70 sightings is quite a lot, and that means there's a good chance of people, particularly in the northern, I would say north of Interstate 80, although there have been some quite a way south of there, a chance for people to see these owls.
So the owls that are coming down, they're looking for food.
Right.
Does that mean that maybe they're not in the best condition when they make their way this way?
Oftentimes, that is the case. And I believe it was, I don't remember now if it was 2 or 3 years ago, we had a huge eruption. So many owls that we'd never seen that many before, not just in Iowa, but they went as far south as Oklahoma. They went down the eastern seaboard. They were being seen in places that they've as far as we know, have never been seen before. So it was a huge eruption. And a lot of those owls were youngsters that were born on the tundra, came south in very poor condition, and probably the vast majority never made it back north. There are adult owls that come south every winter. In fact, we know this from radio tracking studies. And they'll often, they're amazing homing. They'll come to the same area every winter, winter after winter after winter. We know this from studies in upstate New York and Maine and New Jersey, those on the along the eastern seaboard. Those owls come back every single year. Those are adult owls. Owls are not necessarily in bad shape, but they don't mind the migration. And they're able to find food through the winter pretty readily. But a lot of the owls that are coming into Iowa now, many of them have been taken to rehabbers, and many of them don't survive. These owls are largest in terms of weight. They're not the largest in terms of length. That's the great gray owl that you can be found in northern Minnesota, for example. But the snowies are the largest in terms of weight. This is about a 4-pound owl, and you say, well, how can they be so heavy? They don't look that big. Well, the body is pretty small, but they are, being an Arctic bird, and often stay up there through the winter, they have to be able to withstand some incredible winds and cold. So they have very, very thick feathers, extra down underneath, and in fact, I've handled them, and when you put your finger in, you think it's never going to stop through the feathers. You know, there's often a couple of inches of feathery covering over the body. It's pretty amazing, but they are heavy because of the extra feathers that they carry.
What do they sound like, Jim?
Well, I'm not. My voice, as you can probably hear, is not great today.
Oh, you can do it.
But I can't. But you can go online, okay? And they do make sort of a barking sound that is a warning, sort of stay away. And they'll just like other owls, they'll often click their beaks.
Which makes a very loud clicking sound.
Yes, yeah, it is. And they do have I wouldn't call it a hoot. It's more of a scream than anything that is. You got it.
No. That's Hedwig singing to us.
Oh, okay. That's Hedwig. Yes, yes. Yes, and that, of course, many of our listeners will know Hedwig from Harry Potter, of course.
Well, we are going to take a short break. We'll be back. We'll talk more about snowy owls and other owls in Iowa in just a few minutes. I'm talking with wildlife biologist Jim Pease. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, wildlife biologist Jim Pease is here with me, and we're talking about owls. So we've been talking about snowy owls visiting us from the north because there's a large population. Most of the snowy owls that are being seen in Iowa, as you were mentioning, they're mostly fairly young. Often they're very hungry, and they're down here looking for resources. Now, I mentioned these groups, Jim, where people report, okay, we saw a snowy owl in, you know, this part of this county. Mm-hmm. They don't usually give an exact spot of especially a roosting owl, because they don't want them to be harassed.
Right.
How do you see them if you want to see them?
Well, if you want to see them, to do it responsibly, first of all, stay in your car. You can, sometimes the sites are very specific. Oh, go to the junction of X Road and Y Road, and about 100 feet to the east, or 100 yards to the east, you'll see one on the fence post. Now, keep in mind that these owls are Arctic owls, and the trees aren't tall there. So you usually see them quite frequently, either on the ground or maybe up on a fence post or on a rise in the land. They will occasionally go up into trees, but very often you see them on the ground. So stay in your car. That's for one thing. It's a good blind, first of all, to be able to watch them from. Take a good pair of binocs with you, or if you have a spotting scope, that you can really get an up-close and personal look at them. And watch for these white spots on the landscape. It's easier now in most of Iowa because we don't have any snow. So seeing these white spots, it's not always a plastic bag out there. In this case, it might be a snowy owl. And so stay in your car. Do not attempt to feed them. There have been some incidents in previous years where people said, oh, I can get better pictures if I throw them a mouse. That's the wrong thing to do. In fact, Iowa is so interlaced with so many roads, we often find them dead. And I think now we're in the neighborhood of 15 to 20 of the owls that have been found. Found dead on the roads. So they often get hit by cars, so you want to keep them away from the roads, but they're often right on the edge, and you don't want to spook them. So try to just stay in your car and be respectful. If they start clapping their beak at you, you're probably too close. Back off.
It's a very clear signal. Go away.
Right. Go away. Exactly. Exactly. So.
And if you do see them, and, you know, people get pretty excited.
Oh,
How do you share that information without creating a problem for the owl?
Right, yeah. You can report it to your local conservation officer from the DNR or to your county conservation board, and they'll get the message, I think, out to other naturalists, particularly Matt Wittrick and the Iowa Ornithological Union, and talk to your local Audubon Society. This weekend is sort of the beginning of the Christmas bird count across the state, and so there'll be lots of folks out there watching birds, and it's a good time to be able to connect with your sighting, with other folks of similar interests, and you'll learn more and more as you go along.
Now, how long can we you expect them to be around?
Well, that's a great question, and it depends on the winter. If we get deep snows and it persists into the spring, they may hang around for all winter into even early March. But more than likely, they'll start to head back north if they can. And again, these are often young owls that are food stressed already. So you want to a lot of them won't make it through the winter, hopefully we'll have some that will go back north and make it all the way to the Arctic and renew the nesting cycle. I want to come back to something that you asked earlier, your very first question. You asked why this was expected. And what I didn't talk about, I said that the snowshoe hares go through about a 10-year cycle, peak to peak, 10-year cycle of abundance. And in the Arctic, the food webs are so simple that cycles of animals are even more pronounced there. And the cycles are often shorter because the mouse population, the lemming and vole populations, go through about a 3 to 4 year peak-to-peak cycle. So the eruptions of owls are more frequent. So this one was sort of predicted both by proximity to when the last one was, but also we know from, as at the top of the hour in the news, they were talking about how NOAA had just released this this last year was the second warmest year ever, and the previous one had been the warmest year had been the previous one. So the weather patterns are changing, and that is changing the microtine, the voles and lemming populations and their cycles. It's impacting animal cycles already. So the Arctic is changing very quickly. So we may see these eruptions more often, less often, we're not really sure. But we seem to be seeing them a little more often than one would usually predict.
All right. Well, I think we should move on and talk about some other owls that live in Iowa on a regular basis. But before we do that, let's listen to the sound of the snowy owls.
All right. Not really a hoot.
almost a growl or a roar, and then
yeah, that's what I've heard. So. That sort of scream.
Yeah. All right, almost a bark or a scream. It would be easy to mix them up with other creatures of the night.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Now, keep in mind that this owl is a little bit different because we're dealing not just with a night that lasts 24 hours when you're in the Arctic, but in the summertime, the day lasts 24 hours. So these are both nocturnal hunters. They can hunt at night, just like other owls, but they can also hunt all through the daytime.
Oh, interesting. Maybe that's why they're so much easier to spot.
Exactly right.
Okay.
And often, if you sit still, you may actually get, and you're far enough away, so that they're not disturbed with your presence at all. If you sit in your car and just watch them, you may get to witness them hunting. And that's very exciting because they do hunt through the daytime. If they need to or they can, they certainly will.
Now let's talk about great horned owls because, of course, these are owls that are native to Iowa. We see them in Iowa. We hear them in Iowa. And this is getting to be a time of year when there's something, a really wonderful way you can interact with great horned owls. And I know on this program in the past, we've mentioned one of my favorite children's books called Owl Moon
by
Jane Yolen. And it's almost an instructional guide for how to go out and hear and see great horned owls. But that's something wonderful you can do in the wintertime, right?
Yeah, it sure is. And they, great horns, by the way, snowies have just, in the past few years anyway, they've done genetic testing of them, and it turns out they're probably related most closely. They were in their own genus. They're now, it turns out the DNA testing shows that they're related most closely to great horned owls. which is
fascinating.
Fascinating, yeah.
Absolutely. They don't look that much like gray-headed owls.
Right, not at all. But
they're both owl-shaped.
Yeah, and they're big, and they have those huge talons and a lot of the same adaptations. But great horns are, and they're about the same size. Great horns are just beginning to think about the nesting season. And I was out the other night, and I heard great horned owls hooting. And you say, well, why are they doing this in December? That's because great horned owls in Iowa will begin to nest in January. It seems like a crazy time of year to be doing that. But if you think about it, it makes some adaptive sense. Here, they're I call them the tiger of the woods. And they're really very, very adaptable. They have been nesting. They can nest early when other birds are not nesting and when other birds are far south of here. So they don't have a whole lot of competition for prey or for nest sites. Great horned owls are not real choosy about their nests. So they'll often steal a crow's nest or a broken top of a tree.
Right, or even an eagle's nest.
Or an eagle's nest, right, exactly. So they're often, they'll take whatever's available. And so they're beginning to think about nesting now. And in preparation for that, they begin to hoot because that's a territorial sign of great horned owls. That's how they stake out their territories and they announce to other owls that they're in this area, this is theirs, and they also communicate with their mates that way as well.
All right, so if you want to see them on a winter night, what do you do?
Well, go outside and listen, for one thing. Wrap up tightly. Go out with gloves and, you know, adequate clothing on and that. And go to an area that you either have know that they might be around or you've heard them before. Often these are wooded areas or woodland edge areas. Along Iowa's rivers that go throughout the state is a great place to hear great horned owls, and they'll be out there hooting. Sometimes I heard them on the full moon night we just had. Was that December 3rd? Mm-hmm. Right around there, the second, third, fourth, fifth, I heard them hooting at night. So it doesn't have to be a full moon. It could be a pretty dark or a waning phase of the moon like it is right now, and they'll still be around. You can go out and try to imitate them, but don't do that for long because, again, this is a territorial sign, and if you're hooting at the wrong time of the year, and this is not a great time to do that because they think, oh, somebody's invading my territory. I had this happen to me once down in Texas. I wasn't thinking about it being I was doing a workshop there. Wasn't thinking about it being the time of year for owls to nest because it was warm. And, of course, I was wrong. I responded to an owl I heard, and within 30 seconds, he was coming right at me out of the swamp. You know? It's like, okay, never mind. Sorry I said that.
I didn't mean it.
Yeah, I didn't mean that at all. So,
funny.
So you can hoot a little bit. Again, you can go online, listen for, type in great horned owl sounds, and you'll get various places that you can hear what they sound like.
And it's really the rhythm that seems to get the response. I don't think you have to be an ace imitator.
You don't have to be perfect. It's sort of a, ooh, 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 ooh. And it's deep because they're a large owl. And I was amazed I could get that out today.
Could pull that off. I knew you could.
And they are pretty spectacular. Like other owls, including snowies, they have a whole series of adaptations that maybe we can talk about after we take this next break. But they're very well adapted to being nocturnal critters in a diurnal landscape. So it's a great time to get out there and listen for them, and maybe respond once or twice and then leave it alone.
Well, let's slip in a quick listener question here. This one's from Keith. He said, we live on a golf course in Urbandale, and we have a pair of great horned owls that visit us from time to time.
Great.
Their calls are unique and quite loud. They perch on the highest tree limb. Usually the pair lands together. However, lately we've only seen one.
Uh-huh.
Do they mate for life?
That's a great question. And this is a lot of us like to think, being from the human culture, we like to think that all birds mate for life. But we found through genetic studies that while many birds mate for a season or several seasons even, there's a whole lot more messing around out there than we like to think.
But they can live a very long time, right?
Very long time, yes.
So I remember hearing reports of people seeing great horned owl pairs for 30 years in same location.
Yeah.
So
Yeah, 20, 25 years is not uncommon.
All right, a good reason to respect and watch for our feathered neighbors. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. With me this hour, Jim Pease, Emeritus Associate Professor of Natural Resource Ecology and Management at Iowa State University. We're talking about owls today. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. With me this hour, wildlife biologist Jim Pease. We are talking about owls this hour, the owls of Iowa. You are welcome to join our conversation. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Jim, just before the break, we were talking a little bit about great horned owls.
Right.
They're the largest owls in Iowa, right?
Well,
or they're right up there.
Yeah, they're right up there. They're, like the snowies, they're about 2 feet tall. Their wingspan is actually a little shorter than the snowies. Wingspan of great horns is about 4 feet across. If you stretch your arms out 4 feet, that's about the wingspan of a great horned owl. Snowies can be 4 to 5 feet, so in that range. Usually females of both species are larger than the males, by both in height and weight and in wingspan. As a result, often if you hear a pair of great horns, you're the lowest sounding one, unlike in many human pairs, the lowest sounding one in the owls is usually the female, not the male, because they have a larger a body and a larger a voice box to resonate from.
All right, so a larger resonant chamber there.
Right.
And one of my favorite things about great horned owls is just how I love all owls, but
right.
Great horned owls look so wicked. I mean, they have the horns, of course, and those yellow eyes.
Right. Yeah, and that's what's interesting. When we looked at the when I looked at the studies that showed genetic similarities, snowy owls have yellow eyes as well, with that black center. And in this part of the great horned owl range, which is a huge range. There are variations in color patterns in the eastern. The adults have this sort of kind of rusty color in the feathers around the eyes, and then these bright yellow eyes with these black centers poking out of it. I'm not sure it's sinister, but perhaps it is.
It's striking.
It's striking, and it means business, that's for sure.
Well, let's talk about barred owls, which are another kind of owl that I think maybe one of the most common to encounter in Iowa.
You know, I would say it's the one that most people are familiar with because they hear that hoot. I'm not sure that it's more common in terms of total population than great horns, especially after paddling the rivers. I saw so many great horned owls right along our rivers, and I expected to see barred owls. Barred owls are a little bit smaller than great horns. They don't have those ear tufts, which are not ears at all, but merely decoration. They don't have those on the top of their head. And barred owls are about 20 inches long, a little bit smaller. So they have this sort of rounded top to their head instead of having those two sort of horns sticking up. And they have their breast and belly has bars on it up and down, so they're pretty easily distinguished. And the hoot that they hear is one that I think people sort of identify with quite often, as that "Who cooks for you? Who cooks for you all?" And so they've heard that, and so it's common around the state, and it too is very adaptable from being in more prairie savanna environments to woodland environments as well. The two of them, the barred and the great horn, don't get along real well, so often their territories do not overlap because they compete for some of the same food. Although barred owls tend to be more aquatic in their food preferences. They will wade in the water, in shallow water, and eat small fish and crayfish, whereas great horned owls are more restricted to land mammals. The interesting thing that I found paddling, however, over the last several years along Iowa rivers, is that I'm seeing a lot of great horned owls right on the river's edge. So it makes me wonder. I have yet to find pellets of great horned owls that have anything other than hair and feathers in them. Sometimes they do eat birds as well. But I suspect that some of them are nesting in some of the when a tree tips over along the edge of a river, it often leaves a big root ball kind of sticking up, and there are cavities then that go back into the riverbank. And I wonder if great horned owls have taken advantage of some of those cavities there.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Well, and the barred owl, for people of a certain age who remembers the controversy over spotted owls in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
I mean, barred owls look very much like spotted owls.
They do. In fact, they're the same genus. And the big problem out west right now is that the barred owl, which is a common owl, not at all endangered, is invading the same territory that spotted owls, which is an endangered species, very low populations, very much more restricted in the places it will nest. And there's some thought that they're actually interbreeding back with spotted owls. So there's a big controversy about how to manage barred owls so that they don't drive the spotted owl into extinction. It does lead one to wonder if spotted owls weren't some sort of genetic offshoot of barred owls way back in genetic history, and now they've come back together. So,
right.
Yeah,
very
it's interesting. Yeah.
Well, we have just about 6 minutes left. Let's talk about some of the other owl species we might see and hear in Iowa. I think we've really hit maybe the most common, except maybe the screech owl.
Screech
there
owl,
are quite a few of those.
Screech owls are little diminutive things. They're about 6 inches high, and they're often in people's yards, and they don't even know it. They're nesting in hollows in trees. If they can keep get a nest away from the squirrels, they will nest in those cavities of old trees in your yard, and they have this a very strange call. They're called screech owls because the tremolo is a and from a distance, if you're not familiar with what owls sound like, you think somebody's screaming in the woods, you know. It can be quite a challenge.
A little
you think,
eerie.
Yeah. And then they have this this other long sound that goes a little like this. Let me see if I can do this. Can't quite do it. But anyway, it's this long sort of monotone whistle that bubbles along the way. And so they're really a fun owl. We may see also during the winter, you may see coming down from the boreal forest, we see occasionally saw-whets, which sounds like it has a very metallic sound. It is even, it's the same size, about, you know, 6 inches or so, as screech owls, and they, but they have no ear tufts on them at all. And because they nest in an area where there aren't a lot of humans around in the boreal forest, that you can approach them very close to get pictures. But again, be respectful. Don't try and feed them. Don't try and, if you find them, you know, clapping their beak at you, back off in all cases. Be respectful. Keep your distance if you can.
Let's get to the phones. John is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question, or what would you like to talk about?
Well, I came in and kind of caught the tail end of your show and just kind of had a funny story that you reminded me of. Last winter, I was walking my dog in my neighborhood, and my dog is pretty well-trained, so I usually just leave her off the leash. She hangs close. And as I'm walking down the street, I'm watching this huge owl just kind of following us, swooping from rooftop to rooftop. And I thought, oh, that's kind of neat. And it literally followed us for about a block and a half or so. And then almost back to my house, I'm walking through an empty field, and my dog's probably 10 feet in front of me. And this huge owl swoops right over my head, coming down at my dog. And literally came within inches of it. I actually kind of yelped and ran up there. She didn't yelp or anything, so I think the owl, when it got very close, realized this dog's a lot bigger than I thought it was.
Yeah.
I mean, it was close enough that I actually checked her for blood. The funny thing is, my dog is a 62-pound German Shepherd.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
And I can only think, if you had asked, I would have sworn the owl's wingspan was 8 feet. I'm sure it wasn't quite that big, but it sure seemed like it at the time.
Right.
And I think it just got really close before it realized how big this dog was.
Yeah. Great horns are one of our only predators on pretty large mammals. They are one of the primary predators, other than cars, on skunks, on striped skunks. And so great horns will take a fairly large animal. They can take small raccoons. I don't think they'll tackle an adult, but they certainly take small ones, possums, that sort of thing. So it is interesting that it took something as large as a 60-pound dog, but they probably, as you say, they thought, oh, maybe this looks interesting. And
there could have been some curiosity involved as well.
Yeah, could have been. Yeah, yeah. Oh, I wonder what he's doing. You know, and raptors in general, lots of people have trained raptors to hunt with their dog. So I know of people who have dogs that go out in the prairies, and the dog will flush a rabbit, and the hawk comes down and grabs the rabbit then. So they hunt with the dog and a bird of prey. So it's quite interesting. So
absolutely.
So I wonder if this bird had learned that something like that too, that it might have. That humans and dogs scare up potential prey along the way, too. So
now, we just have a little over a minute left. What about the barn owl? How is the barn owl faring in Iowa these days?
Actually, barn owls, this is B-A-R-N, not B-A-R-R-E-D that we talked about earlier. The barn owls seem to be doing better. As Pat Schlarbaum with the Iowa DNR has increased his efforts the last year or so to see if they can't bring some back, and they seem to be doing much better in Iowa than they have for many years.
All right, well, that's excellent news.
Yeah.
Jim Pease, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Get out there and look for those snowies.
All right, and take care and feel better, too.
I will, thank you.
Wildlife biologist Jim Pease, we've been talking about owls today on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Mm-hmm.